She seemed to listen, then added in a confidential whisper, "Let's put it away quietly, as it is, just tiptoe away and leave it, like the bird's nest I used to visit." Again she paused. To me it was like listening to one end of a telephone conversation. "I don't think I can say it," she yielded at last. "I'll try. It is like living on the edge of a vast forest," she began. "I've lived in a clearing all my life. Now I'm going to slip into the forest. It's full of wonderful things, and I've got to find my way through." She fell silent. "I'm getting the fullness of it now," she went on presently. "It's a beautiful rest hall of the spirit. I can't describe it, but it offers marvelous strengthening peace. If I could only establish this in the midst of world affairs, it would make a proper domicile in which, the road I know to produce power and equipment for competent work." She paused again, as if in contemplation. 157. "I feel so strongly this great vaulted life of limitless health, vitality and possibility, surging, pulsing with power and rhythm. Resonance, it is a beautiful sound, made up of the harmony of little voices, like the pulse of a summer night. It is so alive, this vaulted life. It is all feel and happiness. How can I describe it? It has a richness we know nothing about, all the topness of youth combined with all the depth of maturity. And there's such abounding energy to it, such abounding joy. In it I feel as if in perfect physical health. My body actually radiates, there's an outgoing of something which manufactures harmony. I don't know what the substance of it is, but it resembles intense appreciation. I wish there were a name for it. If I said worship, it would mean something else to most people. We have nothing like it. The warmest human glow you can imagine, affection, sympathy, cannot approach it in intensity. They are just sparks from it." She sighed deeply. "I am hunting, bunting for recognized words and terms for this feeling of abounding life. I can't find anything but the word enthusiasm. That's the liveliest little word I can find. All the rest are torpid. It is discouraging to hunt and hunt around among all these." 158. "The road I know, logical and legal and leveling things, and not find flame-leaping words. It's too bad." For some moments she was still. "My world," she continued, with something like reverence. "The intensity of it is almost like suffering, it is so acute. I am roaming, almost despairing, hunting for terms. It is life at the meridian, it casts no shadow. It is life at its core. To translate it would wrench me to pieces. I must keep quiet. As a dealer in words, I thought she was doing very well, and I said so. But she was dissatisfied. To her the thing itself was so much more vivid than any possible reflection of it. To try to tell of it, she disagreed tersely, is like trying to bottle sunshine. In ordinary terms it simply does not convey itself." 3. To the very end Betty continued to find the higher consciousness largely untranslatable. Necessarily, therefore, she often resorted to symbolism. Much of this was arresting and beautiful. I cannot here quote adequately. But the following will serve as an example. "I've entered the hinterland of consciousness," said Betty. "Everything is radiance-filled and fresh and eager-spirited, as on a pinnacle day of extreme youth and extreme tiptoeness for life, more life. There is much of it in across the unknown. The road I know," she broke off, leaving me to wonder what was going on. 159. "I'm playing a most amusing game," she explained presently. "I'm busy collecting different phases of the spell of this country. It is not a tellable thing, but I'll see what is obtainable in word patterns. All the words are too pompous," she continued. "They are too ponderous for the playful, blissful thing I am doing. It is like the great, bosoming comfort of being in the water. I lie on my back in the embrace of the water, only conscious of its caress when I move. It so perfectly surrounds and accepts and sports with me. I dare it up, I dare the water up to see it mend itself so derisively, just laughing its bubbles at the futility of my efforts. I am stroking the water as I swim in the sense of its soft encompassing, and piercing it with arms thrust out. Broken drops flash back. I wonder if I could collect in words some of the sun spell too? I want to get the different phases in fragments, and then bring them together for that spell of enchantment which is the hinterland of consciousness. Now, the sun. It is very commanding. It is not so playful. All I do is to lie subordinate to it. It takes possession of me. Without resistance I give up to its expansion. Magically it dispels my clothes and enters into my bones. My very skeleton grows larger and lighter under its influence. My mind is lulled. I am all atoms and chemistry, all separated and spread out. I might be, 160, the road I know, a mere heat radiation for all the tangibility there is of me. It's too bad I don't understand music, for it is all around me all the time. I get into the sweep of it, into the control and abandon of what you might call great engulfing cadences, which absorb discord and turn it into harmony. It is a curious kind of music, an intoxicating rhythm of things. If you get tired you just let go, and it sweeps you along and rests you. There's always a strong temptation to abandon myself completely, and yet I never do. I always want to, and I always put it deliberately aside as dangerous. I wonder why. It is curiously like fighting off drowsiness. There is always the instinct to concentrate on something practical. I think perhaps there's danger of getting drowned, of getting unbalanced and losing your perception. There comes a woozy point, a giving way to the drunky sensation. That's the danger point. I wonder what those body strings are that can be strained only so much at a time. As I come back I realize somebody has watched over them. For a long time I was certainly no help to Betty in her struggle for expression. I was still looking for something definite. I think my effort to pin things down, the road I know, 161, put her on the defensive. The Invisibles did their best to combat this attitude. They were always encouraging her to loosen up, to make an amusing game of it. They tell me it is just play. Betty herself was speaking. They only want to make it play. It keeps the right balance. Oh dear. She begged. I want to get it into something tangible for Stuart. You've got to cast a material shadow for him. You've got to make it into something like coin he can spend to get things with, or he won't think it any good. She paused a moment. I feel as though I had dived to a great depth to get something for you, she told me, and when I came up and looked at it with your eyes, it was nothing but a cockleshell. As I look back I realize I must have been a great trial, nevertheless I believe my insistences were useful. My stubbornness gave Betty an anchor to windward, counteracted any danger of drifting. At least the Invisibles were kind enough to tell me so. Betty realized that for this period anyway, we must have different points of view. I am emboldening myself, she told me one day, after a long initial pause, and it takes time. Funny game. I have to embolden myself in order to acquire an authoritative presentation of things. You see, we work in different mediums. Yours offers adjustment, 162 the road I know to the highest reaches of comprehension compatible with Earth conditions. My records are translations from other conditions extending beyond normal experience. Each time I have to transmute myself for participation to the best of my ability in the new conditions, and then struggle to turn them into word symbols giving approximate concepts. I keep my contacts with you by passing back and forth from one type of comprehension to the other. It is slow hard work, but it has to be done. I hold my little bit of consciousness as on a magic carpet, miraculously freed from what I can only symbolize to you as terrestrial gravitation, that being the hampering customary conditions as compared with this greater scope of action. Coming here is like coming from a stingy little cabin to magically wrought palaces and vaulted temples, with still more beautiful places beyond, a vast and colorful world purpled over with mystic promises. How can I tell you these things, when they are so big and I am so little? My audacity in even sensing them awes me. Today's experience seems to be a lesson in selection. There appears to be an elaboration and richness in my surroundings which surpasses all my powers of perception. I sense intricacies of beauty I cannot even comprehend. I could easily lose myself in convolutions of the varied appeals to my senses. Fortunately, there is within me a controlling desire, the road I know, 163, and ability to see a few great simplicities of this different and more powerfully vital form of life. While I can sense the stupendously manifold lesser manifestations existing in this particular arc of my illumination, at the same time I can see the fundamental motivations behind them. Because of my hold on these I can support the wealth and beauty and elaboration. My effort, she interrupted herself to explain, is always and always will be, to do the thing itself before I can know about it. 5. Obviously many of Betty's experiences were symbolic shows arranged by the invisibles. For example, I am carefully approaching something, a great presence, it was Betty speaking. I want to see if I can make out who he is and what he has to tell me. Now I can't come any nearer to him, so I will just have to listen carefully. Something is shaping vaguely, as a mass comes to form on a potter's wheel. He is showing me carefully guarded treasures. I know they are treasures, but I don't know what to value them with. I am to select from them as the natural appeal is to me. And then I am to wear them, because of the dignity and responsibility they imply, as a treasure bearer should. It is like an emblem of office laid on me, and I am trying to conduct myself as worthy. I, 164, the road I know, wish you could understand what this kind of spiritual pride is, how it differs from the pride of arrogance. It is a lofty tingling thing that is married to humility. It must be a great poverty of spirit that makes people go unadorned with the emblems of their belief. These emblems now being showed me are beautiful things, so marvelous in design and workmanship, so distinguished in prerogative. They mark the rank that serves. They acknowledge before all men's eyes the grandeur of kinship, the unity of human experiences. I go apparelled thus in crowded places, a member of a great fraternity, seen of all men, but unrecognized by the saddening majority. I am not at all self-conscious about these things I wear, because mockers do not seem to notice them, at least they do not believe they are real. I could not pick out much of that treasure, I did not dare. I had only courage enough to see about two things I could support. I took a beautiful golden disc thing to wear over my heart to keep it from hardening, to keep it tender in spite of contacts with the world. I wanted that very much, very much. And then there was a banner I wanted to hold up over the crowd where all people could see it. But I did not take that because my hands would not be free, and I must have freed hands. The thing I did take was a kind of cloak. It had only a back to it. Somehow it keeps me going forward. I couldn't turn around and go back in it. I do, the road I know, 165, not care much about the backward-looking part of me, and I wanted to cover it up with something that was more nearly the texture of my ideal. There are so many things in that treasure heap. I just selected the things that would give me strength. There is a massive beauty in them, so curiously wrought with every human perception and precious instinct. There is a long golden chain I would like to have had. It was a chain of concentration that does not bind, does not restrain you from expanding. But I did not take it. I wanted it, too. But I did not think I was fit to wear it yet. It is a great pity, because everybody who knows anything will notice that something is lacking. I'll go back someday and get it. 6. I feel it just as a vast current. Betty was trying to describe another aspect of her private world. I am in connection with that current. Little nerve-scattering things cannot hurt me. But that's not enough. How can I arrest and deflect it, this mighty force? How can I handle it? It sweeps through and by me, partaking of me. How can I partake of it? Suppose you found yourself in a mighty thing like this, what would you do? I've got to decide. She studied the problem. When you come over here, she continued, this, 166, the road I know, force is all you've got to begin your work with. All you have is the amount you can take and arrange. I take stock of myself, sense how much individualized current is around me which keeps at bay, as it were, what would be an all-engulfing substance if I'd let it. But I'm not going to let it engulf me. I'm going to act on it. That is as near as I can get to sensation, the first primitive sensation of creative force which I manufacture and maintain. It is the growth of this sensation of greater and greater radius of superior force acting on the primal substance which will make it possible for me to establish my ideal, what I actually am capable of, what my species is in the universal plan. I said species because my ideal, my little atomic arrangement I am capable of making, establishes my species in the universe, and I am capable of changing it continually. This makes the whole universe dependent on the amount of the life force one is able to generate and utilize. One's participation in the abounding beauty of the whole plan is dependent only on one's own efforts. One is tremendously responsible for one's radius. That is what one is judged by. She broke off. I am making it very difficult and unattractive today, I am afraid, she apologized, because it is the beginning of an aspect very hard to put into words. But later the avidity and desire come which lift me into the road I know case of it, like laughing, or breathing in the spring air, or anything else that is the gift of life. 167, I feel as if I had stepped all over a bed of flowers telling you about it. Again, at another time, another attack from another angle, I am, she said, very busy getting a consciousness of my aliveness for you to put down later. It's an acknowledgement and exercise of acute aliveness. I must prepare it first in quiet. It is one of the secrets of all inner creative work and progress and self-propulsion. One of the most essential motivations of progress, put in the invisibles, is the reality of this very thing, this acute aliveness, this warm eager current ever seeking new channels. Without a definitely encouraged consciousness of this aliveness, you are not yet in possession of your highest capabilities. But when you gain it for your own, you will have forever in your hands the magic open sesame of gates beyond gates. You cannot realize all the difference between what has always existed as the common eternal history of the race, and the few inheritors of actual treasure. The astonishing power, the intense stimulation beyond anything you can conceive intellectually, is the reward that awaits your efforts. You grasp intellectually what the raising of vibrations means. Yet could you, deliberately, sitting in your 168, the road I know, chair, raise your vibrations, and, clearly aware of the act, describe and control the accompanying emotion? This is, quite simply, the trained approach to acute aliveness. I cannot accomplish it through the channel of my mind, Betty took it up. I must experiment and tell you myself. I can, for instance, walk from here to the door in various degrees of vibration, which I called it for lack of a better term. I can go as a human lima bean, for instance, life contained within an ungerminated shell, you know. I can walk somewhat in that fashion without particular sense impressions on the way. Or I can go with perhaps some simple idea occupying me, of some business or pleasure. Or I can go in various degrees above that, admitting more and more of life to my inner being, in proportion as I am increasingly released from my restricting shell. Or, finally, I can go with acute aliveness, which is the master dispeller of that containing shell, so that, while I walk seemingly as before, utilizing the same functions, actually I am permitting a flooding in of the greater all-encompassing self. I would then walk towards the door in a beautiful spare moment, occupied happily and naturally in merging myself. There's the secret. Like warm sun rays on a gratefully receptive body, in the pregnant moment of eternity in passing to the door, all the richness of life would flood through me, and I, comfortably, the road I know, 169, deeply happy in my merging with it, would slowly learn the secret of acute awareness and all that it horizons to my soul. I can't tell you what it really feels like, words don't hold it nicely. But it's not only a flooding in, there's an ebb to it, and you flood out with it. Nevertheless, I do not, somehow, lose control of my segment of life. The participation temporarily in the greater unity just expands the segment. The great effort being made today, concluded the invisibles, is to impart the gift of knowledge of the true nature of spiritual practices. It has been so unhumanized, so undesirably presented, so scoffed at and misunderstood. The time is ripe to present it as a warmth and shelter and beauty of the inner life, as ardently to be desired and worked for as those of the outer. Chapter 15 Invisible Alliances 1. This is difficult, was Betty's rather puzzled comment one day. No more inspiration poured in. I am up against a curious kind of waiting for some acts of mine. I see that clearly, but can't seem to make the effort. I feel as if my hands and feet were bound, said she, and yet I was told to make my first experiment. At first I fussed and objected at being thrust so soon, so unprepared, as it were, into the stream of workers in spiritual force. But then I realized I was accompanied by something I was sure eventually to attain. I went back to my hookup with the source to see what first clumsy thing I would do to utilize my power, said she. The first thing I wanted was affiliation, a heart affiliation that abolished separateness. That makes for strength. The second thing I wanted was to make an impress of my convictions. It did not have to be noisy or clamorous, but it did have to be steady and motivating. How few make impressions, only the quiet and the martyred. She was supposed to do something. What? Naturally I was much at a loss, but I did do some 170, the road I know, 171, thing. Do you want to know what I did? It is a sort of foolish thing to tell, but the first thing I did was to throw out all the warmth and happiness I could collect and hurl forth. I decided I was going to have my own circumambience that everybody would like to come into. It would be like a glowing river in its unimpeded progress, with song on the way, and sparkle, and, by Jove, I was going to see that it kept up its exuberance and dance and vitality and fling. I got enthusiastic about it, and I worked terribly hard, until I found out, after I had made it, that I carried myself along quite gaily. This met with approval, as a beginning. You realize how useless and futile you are, you try hard and experiment until you acquire something with which to work, said the Invisibles. This, said Betty with satisfaction, apparently describing the state of consciousness to which this brought her, seems to be ahead in productivity of any other surroundings I've had. It is a place where things are done, and done efficiently. I've got all the release and freedom of striding on hilltops and through spring-swept days, and the feeling of superlative powers within. Apparently the method of the moment was to throw her overboard, as one teaches a puppy to swim. I am, said she after a long silence, plopped out into a place of turmoil and stress beating upon my, 172, the road I know, serenity. It was like a fire drill, a first aid course, what to do in an emergency. I remembered the advice given for the physical 0 hours. Leave pain and puzzlement outside, they said, and creep to your quiet center. Let your heart seek close proximity to the divine spark, believing in its power to remagnetize you. Be still. Let it work. This, interjected the invisible, is the same thing as what we have called taking directly from the source. It supplies harmony fitted and prepared for instantaneous use, with all the warmth necessary for the continued life of that harmony in practical affairs. The chaotic din and discord continued around me, Betty went on, and I thought, I must fly to my army of invisible friends. With them I must hastily fling out worship, thankfulness for knowledge of superior weapons, claiming the reinforcement of them, determined that the constructive forces would inform my action. Then I stepped out naturally into the battle, and held on to my determination, and let it work. A great pressure came against me, like the swift currents we could barely stand against in crossing the Alaskan rivers. A great pressure was on me, and I felt my inadequacy. It was an emergency. What could I do to maintain myself, and to act against the current, as it were, like a power ship against the tides? At once I reinforced myself with the strength of the army of invisible friends we have been unifying. The pressure, the road I know was still there, but the crisis had passed, turned by superior strength. 173, you see, our best weapons are really our invisible alliances. That part must not be neglected, as it is our present field of action. Action without the directing power of the spirit runs to waste, and on the other hand unrelated spiritual example seldom reproduces itself in others. She was feeling for a technique of application. I just break up and work hard and am uncomfortable, she told me, and then I find I am raised up to a super state and in touch with something that I did not have before. I see it vaguely and look back and tell you about it. I don't just sit and read about it and see it, I do it, whatever I'm at. That is why I work so hard and keep quiet so long. The way I'm presenting this, it sounds so gloomy, she broke off to complain. But really it is so cheerful, so jolly and so loving and wise and warm-hearted. You see, it isn't any question of going out and trying to be good. There's a great danger in that, because we are apartment to lose the exuberance of our sinfulness, and that is taming, very very taming. What you miss, the way I'm telling it, is the exuberance. What's the matter with zest? Suggested the invisible. You do not think of muscular exercise, for instance, when you experience zest. You do not iron yourself out into any newly acquired condition. Duty, 174, the road I know, does not drive you to it. Logic is left in storage. With full flow through you proceed to enjoy living. That is spiritual action. Of course, they added, you cannot go around zesting things priggishly. That is not what is meant. What we want to get into these teachings is naturalness, not priggishness. They recurred again and again, in many forms of expression, to the assurance that they demanded of Betty no great and noble tasks. Just living, said they, ordinary daily living. Plenty of material to work on there. Nothing is too small to work on with the tools of eternal values, emphasized the invisibles. Take the smallest things, little early experiences or situations of a commonplace day, you can, by your concentration of desire, transform them into a spiritual significance akin to a poem. The invisible's word poem set Betty off up a bypath. Poetry is thought's most buoyant form, ready for release into emotion, she said to me, with an air of confiding something. I am poetry now. It is the most volatile form of human communication. I am beauty running free, only shaped by the momentary effort to reflect some particularization of life, instead of life itself. Always it is shaping, and the limitations of form are its bane, the ecstasy of its suffering. The road I know, 175, have you ever thought of the visual body of a poem? She continued her apparently irrelevant fancies. How it typifies its buoyancy compared to prose. It floats on a page, it isn't anchored at all the comers. I do things so curiously, said Betty after a pause. I had to do some sordid scrubbing stuff, and then in order to make a poem out of it, I blew some soap bubbles out of the scrubby stuff, and laughed. I came over today in a blind and unilluminated state, she continued, back at last to her knitting, and the first function I felt was of pouring myself out. I think after a while this would get me all the functions I needed. Anyway, if I didn't do it, I wouldn't have much. 2. I am, on another occasion, said Betty with satisfaction, sort of contained in a general heart expansion, nice and human. I can't explain it, I don't think that would make sense, she answered some unspoken suggestion. The word love doesn't suit my needs, I'll ass it by. I must gather something expressing more vigorous action, less fuzzed up with individuality. I'm doing something quite astonishing. There are influences around me radiating the warmth of human, 176, the road I know, affection, only with so much greater power. I dissolve to their love, I surround them as they surround me, steeping in each other's heart expansion. It's so transforming, breathtaking, and I can't tell you in words. Now, the strange thing is, I reach out and spread this atmosphere around each one I care for. And it enlarges and grows stronger and becomes firm, like a continent in surrounding ocean. Beautiful things are produced on it. I don't understand the rest very well, I'm so puzzled because it's still an individuality. I am that firm body. I feel it in all its part, and yet it is composed of many people. How can that be? I only sense it through the atmosphere of its spaces, as it were. Betty laughed. That was a funny trick. I went out and brought in a very reluctant one. She had to come. At the next session the job of giving expression to what seemed to be the inexpressible, was tackled again. It's too big to say, Betty confessed at last, but the only way to get it is the constant struggle to communicate it. I suppose it's hopeless, but I'll try. Last time I tried to analyze the different atmosphere I was in, the greater consciousness, which was the substance all of us contain. I was no longer isolated in a small, individual, self-seeking consciousness. I was in an atmosphere of sympathetic attunement with the all. I tried to tell you of that last time. Now I am going on from there.